Blog Talk Radio.
Radio Free Palmer, 89.5 KVRF, presents Mushing Radio, hosted by Robert Forto. Mushing Radio is about dog-powered sports, living in the Great White North, and mushing. Visit our website at mushingradio.com. Here is your host, Robert Forto.
Hello and welcome, everybody. This is Robert Forto, hosting from the mushing capital of the world, Willow, Alaska. And on the line, we have Patrick Campbell calling in from California. He is the author of a new book called Song of the Runners. Pat, how's it going?
Really good, Robert. Thank you. And thank you, KVRF, for having me.
Well, thank you. Where are you calling in from, Pat?
Just outside the little town of Callahan, population 52. It's up near the Oregon border, west of Mount Shasta. It's right where the Marble Mountains and the Trinity Alps come together. I have more dogs than the town has people.
That sounds like what's going on in Willow. I think we outnumber people by dogs by at least 50%. I'm not sure. So
I understand that.
Up that way, do you guys have snow yet? Are you guys on sleds? What's happening down that way?
Oh, I'm getting bored on the ATV. We usually have snow by now. This has been a really dry November and December. In fact, I usually get my guide business going, Dog Sled Express, by this weekend at least. And it's not showing much snow out there for about another 10 days.
Wow. Yeah, we got our first big snowstorm this past weekend. We've been fighting the ice and the rain for the last month or so, but we got about a foot of snow here in the last 3 or 4 days, so it's nice to be out there in that nice fluffy stuff at least for a while to get those training miles in as we prepare for a bunch of qualifiers. And we're going to talk to you tonight about a race that you did, and it's a very unique story. You wrote it in a style that's a little bit different in terms of you're talking at one point, and then I understand your lead dog, Casper, takes the reins a little bit too. Is that right?
Yeah. It wasn't really something that I had planned when I started to write the book. It just kind of happened. And it's turned out pretty – I'm real pleased with the way it's turned out, because it gives you the perspective from not only the musher but the dogs and what's going on between both.
You know, I'm looking forward to reading it myself. I haven't had a chance yet, but hopefully we can entertain our guests this evening by talking about it. But before we get into it, Pat, what kind of mushing experience do you have besides your expedition business, your tour business, I guess?
Yeah.
Are you an old-time musher going way back, or are you new to
It's about 25, 26 years. I started a little bit late in my life. I moved out here from Minnesota in 1980, and then around 87, 88, I started running dogs, and shortly I was doing the guide business, more of a kind of a tax write-off, and then got real serious about it after 3-4 years and got into the racing end of it, distance racing. And did a lot of Race the Sky, Cascade Quest, some stage racing at the Attaboy 300, and different various races around the West Coast.
Are you using Alaskan Huskies?
Yeah, I started out with, like a lot of people out here, they started out with the Siberians. And then when I went to my first big race in Race to the Sky in Montana 350, all of a sudden I realized what these Alaskan Huskies were doing, and they were going twice as far, twice as fast as my Siberian Malamute crosses were, and then that's when I switched over and started to get into some good breed lines and kind of worked into my own for what works here with the climates that we have.
So tell us a little bit about your dogs. How many do you have in your kennel? Do you use all of them in your guide business, or do you have kind of a separation between guide dogs and race dogs, or what's your setup like?
We've got just under 80 dogs. You always have your pups coming up, and then your retired dogs. I've probably got 8 or 9 retired dogs right now. And then, let me see, I forgot the second half part of your question, I'm sorry.
Oh, I was just asking if the race dogs share the time with the guide dogs.
I'd use them as a guide, which doesn't make it great for racing. I don't make that as my number one thing anymore. I've been running the open class sprint. We've had that here for the last couple of years at the Siskiyou sled dog races in Northern California by Mount Shasta. And I really enjoy that. I just don't have the time to sit on the ATV and train a distance team, nor do I have the time while I'm doing my guide business to just take off and go to a distance race anymore, because, you know, it takes up a good full week to do that right. And you're usually traveling to Montana or Washington or something like that.
So tell us what your clients think about getting on that sled for the first time. You know, a lot of people, they just get hooked right away, don't they?
Oh, yeah. It's comical. You know, I before the rides, I kind of give them a warning of what to see, because they're not expecting to see the athletic-looking dog, which is a good, slim, in-condition, trained dog, muscular dog. They're expecting to see the big, fluffy, long-haired, beautiful husky, you know, Malamute Siberian type things, and then to see ours, which are the Alaskan Husky, which is the real athlete, I believe, of the husky world. And it's comical too, because you have to tell them now. They're going to go crazy as soon as I pull the harness out. So we're going to do the safety talk now, so that you can hear me. And they're kind of going, yeah, okay. And then when you do finally pull the harness out, all of a sudden their eyes widen. And then by the time you're trying to get them into the sled, you know, they got the trailer that hauls 20 dogs and the pickup that hauls 20 dogs. So you're packing 40 dogs over there, and the trailer and the truck is rocking as the team is leaning into it. And they're kind of skeptical almost to get into the sled. And you get them in there, you know, and you say, now it's going to turn really quiet as soon as we take off. And they're like, yeah, right. But as soon as you hit the quick release and take off, then it just turns into a whole different, another world, quiet world of the sound of the dogs and the, you know, the sled itself on the snow. It's pretty 180 degrees contrast.
So do you run overnight type trips? Are you doing, a short course? What is your guide business like? You know.
Yeah, we do it on the south slope of Mount Shasta near the ski park, and we have a course that's 8.3 miles with just fantastic scenery. You can see down into California and see the Lassens and the Warner Mountains to the east, and a lot of great views. And then, of course, you're looking right at Mount Shasta on the return trip. And we do one-hour tours.
My wife is from that area there. She she grew up in Chowchilla, so she's very familiar with that part of the country for sure. I didn't mean to interrupt. You were saying?
Yeah. And we do one-hour tours. We go about 8.3 miles in 1 hour. And, that's in the sled itself. And I like to encourage people on the return trip, once we get through the fast corners and stuff and downhill fast runs, to jump back on the runners and join me. And then I have a tandem handlebar sled also for the real adventurous that want to get a little bit more of a feel of running it. And so that they feel comfortable, then I just sit down and let them run it until they get a little nervous over the speed or the, you know, they're being out by the edge of the road or something like that. So it makes them feel a little bit more comfortable to know I can jump up and take over.
So more information about your guide business at dogsledexpress.net. Do you have a Facebook page as well for your business?
Not for my business, no. I just, in fact, my wife and I were just talking about that. We need to get that going, but I do it just for myself, Facebook for myself.
So dogsledexpress.net, you can find out all the information about Patrick Campbell's guide business there, and, of course, information about his new book, Song of the Runners. And as we mentioned at the top of the show, it's a little bit different style. You're writing not only as yourself, as the dog driver, but also in the eyes and in the voice of Casper, one of your lead dogs. So it's about a 220-mile sled dog race, and I assume that that's an Iditarod qualifier in terms of distance. Is that correct?
Yeah, we did that for a couple of years, and then you know how the economy hit bad, and it seemed like it was that you just couldn't get the distance racers weren't quite traveling around as much as they could, especially down here. I don't know if that affected your races up there, but it certainly I noticed on the entries from different big distance races down here. So after the second year, we had the second year it was five or six entries, and then we decided just to do the sprint races, and we have great turnouts for that.
So you had mentioned that you ran the Race to the Sky and the big boys of the lower 48 in terms of the qualifiers down there for folks that are familiar with that, the Bear Grease, the UP 200, and as you mentioned, the Cascade Quest, and of course, the Race to the Sky. Tell us about this race in particular. What made you want to write a book about it?
Well, it actually... when I got done with the race and I was kind of home for, you know, a month, I started thinking about it and really what really happened and what went on during that race and the bond and everything that was developed during the race and the trust with myself and the dogs and the situation and all the stuff that was thrown at us during the race, weather-wise and just, you know, a few wrist injuries and things like that, which that happens at any distance race. But it was, I started thinking about it more and more, and I thought, you know, if nothing else, I should just write this down for my nephews and, you know, their kids someday to know that what their uncle did, you know, for a living and did for a time in during his life, and that's basically why I started writing the book. And I got maybe, half a dozen pages, 10 pages into it, and I just slipped it to my wife and says, hey, tell me what you think of this. And she got excited about it, and then it kind of took off from there.
And they do. We just finished our first book. It's a children's book, but, you know, the process of doing the whole thing with getting it printed and the copywriting and the editing and the printing and all of that just takes so much time. Did you enjoy the process?
At times I did. At times I didn't. I've learned a lot more on the computer by doing this. It's been quite a learning curve for me. My wife is really good with the computer, and that's what she works with most of the day. So it was quite a learning curve for me. But the editing was tedious because I don't know how many times I've gone over it. And then my wife, I'd go through it 3-4 times and correct things, and then my wife would... she does a lot of that for a job at work, is editing text, and she just get a hold of it, and it was just like 3/4 of a page was marked up. And I go, wait a minute, I didn't think it was that bad, you know. But then as the process went through the book and I finished the book, my English got a lot better, and it was less intimidating to hand over the pages to her and let her start doing the editing.
You know, it's interesting because after you write it and you read it a few times, you're pretty much reading the same thing over and over, and you pass over a lot of mistakes because, you know, you're reading as you want it to sound in your head.
Exactly.
That's what I noticed, yeah. You know, those can'ts that are misspelled or the wrong punctuation really catches you up when you're trying to do it yourself, at least on my point
of
view.
Yeah, and for me it was really trying to stay in the right tense where you're,
right.
You know, in past, present, or past tense, you know. And keeping that throughout the book and through the changeover in voice during the book. That was for writing I'd written another book, but I haven't published it. But this, the one that actually got serious on it, you know, it was quite a learning there of staying in the proper tense.
So tell us about Casper. You had written in your bio here that he tells part, he or she, I'm not sure which, tells part of the story in the book. She's a lead dog, right?
He's a lead dog, yep. Just been a super, super dog. I'm retiring him this year from the guide business, which is hard to do, as all your mushers out there know, especially when you see them in their peak of their performance, you know. And then, but he's quite a character. He's always been a jokester in lead. You can't take your eye off him, but when it comes down to the nitty-gritty, he really knows how to dial a team in, you know what I mean?
Right.
yeah, when the tough things get tough, it's like he just the dogs look up to him. They always respected him and always liked him. So it was a special little thing went on during the race, and it was kind of interesting to put it in his voice, because then he's communicating his thoughts and things through the rest of the team, so they're talking about me lots of times. So actually, Casper got the best lines, because I'm all the stupid things that we do as dog drivers, you know, I just thinking what these dogs must think of us. And it's kind of, you know, it's just kind of, I remember a couple of times where I took a good crash during the race, and I'm just thinking, what, they must just think I'm a total bonehead back here, you know. I got my hands full, but they don't realize it, you know, of all the silly things we can do and the ways you can write them about them talking about it. It was a lot of fun.
I totally agree with that. Patrick Campbell is our guest tonight here on Mushing Radio, calling in from California, talking about his new book, Song of the Runners. His website is dogsledexpress.net. So, Pat, as you were on the trail here on this 220-mile race, you know, they all start out with expectations that we're going to do well and nothing's going to go wrong, and within 10, 15 miles, the littlest things can compound very quickly, can't
they? Oh, yeah. Yeah, and when it hits the fan, it really does hit the fan sometimes. And that's one of the things that I really enjoyed out of this race is that, you know, it's so easy to get, especially when you're tired. Everybody knows it if they've done distance racing. That's where the real challenge is, when you start getting exhausted, and to be able to keep your composure, keep your focus. And I was really pleased with myself in that race, because we had a lot of stuff. First of all, being the organizer of the race, and then the chairperson of the Siskiyou Snow Dogs. And then you got sprint races going on while we're doing the distance race. So you're constantly thinking about that. And I went into the race doing what I tell my kids when I speak at the outdoor school programs, that you should never do, and that is to ask them to do something that you haven't trained for.
Right.
And we went into that race doing that, and I was really concerned about it. I hadn't had a lot of sleep, and I went into the race where I was not in the condition I admittedly should have been in, mentally and resting-wise, and the challenges that hit myself and the dogs during the race. We had a heavy rain the day before, so the trails were punchy. So you had to constantly be holding the dogs back through certain periods of the race. And it just kind of compounds up. You know, like you say, it can start out in the first 2 miles, you know. And it's interesting to see how you handle it and then to see how the dogs react to how you're handling it. And that's a lot about how the race went, too, and in the book, is how I respond, how they respond to me, and how when things got going tough, how I used a little humor and a little, you know, Irish songs along the way to perk them up, and making foul songs, sounds and things like that to kind of try to lighten it up to where they laugh. You know, I'm thinking, well, if I was tired and worn down, what would I want to hear from my dog driver? And that's what I kind of did during that race. And I didn't go into it trying to think, well, I want to take first, second, or third, you know, type thing. I just went into it with the intention to, let's just finish this one, because I really don't know what these dogs say. I think we run like, oh, 4 or 5, 16, 18-mile runs, and then we got into the guide business. And we went in and I was going to be asking them to do 45, 50-mile legs. And
right.
It was really interesting to watch them step it up. And as they started out with some young dogs, and to see them and mature during the race itself, it was really a special race.
So can you give our listeners an idea about a 220-mile race in terms of time and you know, what goes through your mind in those couple of days? You know, a lot of folks that are listening, you know, they're mushing fans of Iditarod, and they follow it along on the Internet or insiders on the Internet for Iditarod.com or whatever, but they don't necessarily understand how much time 220 miles takes in hours. Tell us about that.
Well, you figure you're going to do in a short race, which I say a 220 to, you know, 200 to 250 mile distance race, which is a shorter distance race, you're going to figure that you're going to do over 100 miles a day. And that's, you know, and in the Iditarod, they do that, and but we push it a little bit more. We, you know, so we started this one here, and what was it, on a Friday morning, and I came in Sunday morning, just at daybreak. So
about 48 hours there on the runners.
Just under 48, yeah, it was under 48 hours, yeah.
Do you have a particular run race schedule? You know, back in the old days, it was kind of the same run six, off six. Do you have something similar? I know the Iditarod guys are a little different now.
Yeah, it seems to be changing over the years. In this particular race, we pushed it out to through the first, you know, at the first checkpoint, which was, I believe, 35, 40 miles. We mostly just gave, you know, water and checked feet and picked up and moved out, snacked and moved out to the next checkpoint, which was ended up being about 70 miles into the race, I believe, you know, and then we gave them 6 hours off, 4 to 6 hours. I think that the lead teams took 4 there, and then I was somewhere around 5.5 hours. And then there was a mandatory, let me see, I'm having to think now, there was a mandatory 4 hours at the halfway point, and then it was however you wanted to run your team on the way back. But everybody basically, you know, stopped every 40, 50 miles and gave rest. Because it was humid in parts of it because it rained so hard the day before. And so that was the hard part, was just the changing of the trail conditions were, you know, from altitude to altitude, it was quite taxing on the dogs.
You know, one thing to note, and I'm sure you can elaborate on this a little bit, Pat, is when people think of going into a checkpoint, there is no rest really for the people, especially on just a 4 or 5 hour rest. It's quite a bit of work for the musher. It's rest time for the dogs, isn't it?
It really is rest time for the dogs. All your attention is towards dogs. In fact, one of the chapters in the book, a big part of it was called dog care, and that was when we got to the second checkpoint for their first long rest, and it kind of went through what we're doing and how we change rudder covers. But first thing you got to do is take care of your dogs, get all your equipment ready to go, and then if you're lucky, if you can get in some rest time. So often, when I do Race to the Sky, oh my gosh, I don't know, I think I'd maybe pick up, if I was lucky, in 350 miles and in 3 days of racing. You know, you're lucky if you get 8 hours sleep. You're lucky if you get 5 or 6 hours sleep, because you're just constantly working and warming through foods, getting snacks ready, tending to wrist, a lot of massage, a lot of Eljuval, you know, and just tending to their feet and their muscles and trying to get dialed in. And that's where, you know, the difference between the successful mushers and the maybe the not as successful in distance racing is how you use your time, how
right.
you stay focused when you are just dead asleep. I mean, I remember coming and Race the Sky one time, 50 miles out, and coming into a checkpoint, and the only way I could stay asleep was to holler at the top of my voice and literally slap myself silly. And you're just thinking, I remember distinctly thinking, what must these dogs think of me? They must be thinking, how can we ditch this guy the next quarter? He has flat lost it, you know, and where you're actually sleep deprivation, hallucinating from lack of sleep, where I had 2 white lead dogs in the headlights, and they would literally disappear like the Roadrunner in a cartoon and pop back up, and you'd see him again, and you're going, oh, my God, am I actually losing my mind, until you realize and, you know, grab a hold of reality and say, no, this is just, you've got sleep deprivation. You've got to get some sleep at the next checkpoint. Then I remember getting 2 hours sleep at that checkpoint and then going on and finished the last leg, I think, was 65 miles. And and was just fine, but you just it's scary, you know. And that's the hard part is not just taking care of the dog, but you got to start realizing what you're doing to yourself and start taking care of yourself, or you can get in trouble out there.
You sure can. So, Patrick, we have about 5 minutes left here on the show. I want to hear, besides everything you've already said, kind of given a background of your typical race, tell us one particular story in the book, whether it's written by you or by, quote-unquote, written by Casper, your lead dog. Tell us a story that happened out there on this trail, on this race.
It was the first time, and it's the only time it's really ever happened to me. We came out of it the far checkpoint halfway through the race, and we're headed back. And I had a dog with me named Lady that had a slight wrist problem as she came in. And I massaged her and got to where she wasn't showing a limp at all. And basically, she was covering it. Once we got out of the checkpoint, I could see, okay, she's got a prominent limp. And I thought, well, I was only about 3-4 miles out, and I thought, okay, I'm going to turn the team around and go back to the checkpoint and take her out. And I literally, Casper did mutiny on me. He would not turn the team around. I have my dogs, because of out in California, have so many short spurs to train on, but you never have real big loops in these mountains.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to do a lot of turning your team around, and I get up through the team and call them to wheel around, and they'd start going by me. As soon as I'd run back to the sled, they'd turn around and would go back up the trail. And after about 3-4 times of this, I decided, okay, well, I'm going to have to be packing Lady before we get in the next checkpoint. But they literally mutinied on me and were not going to turn around. At that point in the race, they were so mentally steadfast that they were going to finish this thing, and it was just literally one of the coolest things I'd ever seen. And then Casper and I had a little go-around, and he got the best of me. It was pretty funny. It's a funny point in the book. It's a shock to me, but it's written in Casper's voice. It's pretty funny, his angle of it.
So Patrick Campbell is our guest, Song of the Runners. How can folks get this? I know they can order it on your website, but also you have versions for the iPad and the Kindle as well. What do you think is the best way to take part in this? Is it the electronic version or the old-fashioned way, holding in your hands?
It's both are good. I'm new to this electronic booking. Books, Kindle and Fire, which my wife gave me one now, and it's a very reasonable way of getting the book. It's probably 30% of the cost of buying the book and having it shipped to you. But then there's also, you can get it through Amazon. Just go to Amazon Books and just put in Pat Campbell as author and Song of the Runners, and you can get it that way and ship directly. They will print the book, one book at a time, if you call in that way, and ship it directly to your house. Or you can go to, like you said, to my website, and I can send out a signed copy, and that's a little bit cheaper than going through Amazon.
DogSledExpress.net is the website. Pat, anything else you'd like to talk about before we close? About 90 seconds.
I'd just like to thank you for the opportunity to talk to all the mushers out there. I've been getting a lot of support in Facebook from them all, and thanks for Dog Works Radio for having me. I really appreciate it.
Hey, no problem. Enjoy the mushing out there this year. Hopefully you guys get enough snow to get out there and do your thing with your guide business. I know it's sometimes difficult down in that neck of the woods to get enough snow to get things off the ground, so good luck with that.
Yeah, good. I appreciate it. In 4 years, I guess, I've been doing the guide business. I've only had 1 year that I didn't get all the holidays in, so I'm still keeping my fingers crossed because it's such a big time of the year for us. Thank you. I appreciate it.
No problem. So we got a week before Christmas. I guess we better go out there and do some snow dancing then.
Yeah, we could sure use it. It seems to be going everywhere back east and south of us, but just not quite here yet. But it comes here, and it can dump literally 5 to 10 feet overnight in this type of country. So that's what I'm hoping for, a good dumping to come in.
Very good. Pat, thanks again for your time. We'll talk again soon, okay?
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Patrick Campbell, author of Song of the Runners, dogsledexpress.net. See you guys next time. Goodbye.